Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome into Attacking Third, brought to you by PNC Bank. Brilliantly boring since 1865. It's a very special edition of this show today because it is the 1 year birthday of the Golazo Network. Congratulations to everybody involved. Huge accomplishment all around. And there are so many people that don't get the credit that they deserve because they're behind the cameras or they are beyond, right, that we don't get to see them. So we just want to say thank you to everybody that has a little piece to do with this team and everything that we do on camera. So also to the listeners, you guys, amazing. This has been such a journey.
It has been a really fun journey to watch. I mean, Jenny, you were part of Morning Footy from day one, and then we stole you over here at Attacking Third. Can you believe it's been a whole year?
A whole year of living in Stamford, Connecticut. Darian, here we are, huh? A year later. I mean, the Morning Footy crew, you're always on the show as well. I mean, what a cool accomplishment. I mean, especially everyone behind the scenes that we don't really get to thank. We saw their 1 year birthday pictures today, and it was really cool.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I love this first soccer network. I can't believe that get to be a part of it, especially like I had no idea this was going to be a thing. Remember, I interviewed with you and Sandra. Interviewed.
Yeah, it was just us on YouTube hanging out.
It has been a journey. Lisa, I know you've been on the Attacking Third podcast for forever, beyond the Golazo Network, so congratulations to you as well. Everybody, you guys are awesome. Bob, camera guy, producers, Courtney Stith, Adriana, who we always lean on for all. Tonelli, by the way, I got the last name there. Everything, you guys, thank you so much. Let's get straight into this show because we have so much to talk about. We know that Emma Hayes is leaving Chelsea at the end of the season to take over as the head coach of the U.S. Women's National Team. And according to The Telegraph, Chelsea have reached an agreement with Sonia Bonpastor to take over as Chelsea's head coach after she's currently the coach of Lyon, and she looks to leave her current team on a high note. They look to finish an unbeaten season in France and to win another Champions League trophy, which they could be up against Chelsea for that. I'm going to go to you, Lisa, on this one. Is she the right woman for this job at the Blues?
Yes. To me, yes, Sonia Bonpastor is the right woman because of how this unfolded. Her contract is not up with Lyon right now. Chelsea sought her out to take over this role, knowing that her contract wasn't up. She wasn't technically available for hire at this point. She is the only female coach in the last 15 years who has won a Champions League title. And that is one thing that Chelsea is striving for. That's what they want, to win Champions League. And she's done it. So there must be something in the mix there about why they're bringing her into this. Of course, there is the topics of, is the Super League a tougher league than it is in the French league with Lyon playing? But she also has really good players at Chelsea that are there and they have an established system. And I think the competition is going to be good for her because when you level up the competition and the opposition that you're going up against, you also level up yourself. And that's what we could see from Bonpastor.
What do you think, Darian? Because there are those questions, right? Coming from the French league, there's a certain level of competition that you're facing. And then to take over for Emma Hayes, who has such a storied history, right? She brought this team from basically the unknown when women's football was kind of getting going, the Chelsea squad to begin with, to what they are now in the powerhouse that they have been. Do you think that she can take over the helm and be as successful as Emma Hayes was with this team?
I think success is going to look different for Bon Pastor than it does for Hayes. Hayes obviously has built a legacy. She's been with Chelsea for so long, has built this program from the ground up, and has honestly created so much more visibility and rights for the players and for the league as well. So it's totally different, her coming in. But I agree. I think I like that she's coming from the French League over to the Super League. It's different competition in France. Top four teams are the biggest competition. England, you don't know what's going to happen week in and week out. So I like this. I think it's growth for her. It's growth for the team. I like that it's going to add another wrinkle to these players as well. Having a new coach with a completely different style who's also won Champions League, which Chelsea have not done, is huge for them. This, Sonia Bonpastor has done it as a player and a coach. So
that's
I wanted to add that, as a player. I would
and
love
coach.
That as a player, a coach coming in, knowing exactly what it takes, has had success both sides of it. I think she's going to do great.
Yeah, I think one of the big things is that she has dealt with some big personalities on Lyon as well. Obviously, you're going to face those with Chelsea, although they are such a united team. But that has to do with having that experience matters, right? That you can deal with a big locker room, someone that has a big voice on those teams. So it's interesting to see how this all plays out for Sonia Bonpastor. Again, that was the Telegraph who announced that. Let's go straight into the U.S. Women's National Team against Canada. The She Believes Cup trophy goes to the U.S. Women's National Team. 2-2 draw here. Darian.
Yeah, this was a really good game. Started early in the 40th minute. This ball over the top, we're seeing this from the U.S. time and time again. Ashley Lourdes gets on the end of it. Alyssa Nair comes out. Ball's pushed over to Idrana Leon, who loves to score against the U.S. She's never going to miss from there. She puts it away, gives Canada the goal at the end of the first half. But in the 50th minute, little layoff from Jaden Shaw. How many times do we see this from Sophia Smith in the NWSL season? You can't give her space anywhere around the 18. She's gonna finish left with her right. I love this for her. It's good to see her back in form. And then I love this trio, Shaw to Rodman, Sophia Smith with the finish. Black Ops up top, let's go. The U.S. goes ahead in the 68th minute, but it is short-lived, sadly. But I love this combination between these three players.
Canada down, but not out. Adriana Leone into the box against Dunn. Smart play by Leone. She initiates the contact. It is a foul. She goes down, then from the spot, Adriana Leone puts it away. Canada now level with 5 minutes left in regulation. They go to pens. Who else would be the superstar than Alyssa Nair? Right now it's tied 4-4, stepping up to convert this penalty. Oof. Incredible job by Alyssa Nair. She makes the save, and Emily Fox, the final penalty kick taker for the United States. She scores, and U.S. win 5-4 on pens to lift their fifth consecutive She Believes Cup. Of course, they had to take the long route there, going into penalties at the end of it, but they get it done.
It's Canada. They like to keep it exciting.
Exactly. We'll go reverse in time here, right? We're going to go ahead and start with Alyssa Nair in the penalty kick shootout, because that is such a headline, right? The fact that she scores one. No, she saves one. She scores one, and then she saves another one. What an incredible player. We saw her do this in the W Gold Cup as well. She just comes up big in those big moments, Lisa.
She is that girl. She is that goalkeeper. And it does stem back to the World Cup this summer and the United States losing on pens against Sweden. I think it changed something in Alyssa Nair. The fact that she made a save and it was just millimeters that crossed the line in order for the United States to be knocked out of the World Cup. Now she makes three saves in this penalty kick shootout and converts her own. The focus, the studying that Alyssa Nair has to know which way the opposition is going to go and be able to just do it with so much confidence and like it's nothing. She doesn't like it so. Just
I
another
love
day
seeing
in the
her
park.
Face after she makes a save or she scores because she's just stone
There's
cold
no
fox.
Emotion. Mm-hmm. There's no emotion.
But I love it because she's just in the zone. Like, I was hyped watching it on my phone, like trying to drive home at the same time.
Danger. Danger.
I was in traffic.
I was in traffic.
But I was hyped for her. But I love that she's a stone cold fox. And I think that feeds the energy of the team as well going into this. And if I'm Canada going to take a penalty and looking at her and she just looks.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God.
It's so
even
intimidating.
As a penalty cook, even as a taker, you have so much confidence when you go and put the ball in the spot that you are going to do well when you know that your goalkeeper has it handled.
Yeah.
And she just made two saves. Like, you just feel so much confidence.
I love the fact that we can talk about her on penalty kicks, right? I had a one-on-one with her during the W Gold Cup where we talked about, you know, saving the penalties, and she's more so thinking about the ones that she didn't save. So she saved three here. She's probably thinking about the four that weren't saved by her, because that's the personality she is, and that's why she is at this elite level and continues to grow and grow and grow. But we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the tactical game plans that these two teams in Japan and Canada have used against the United States and where those goals have come down. Marion. Obviously, the left side, making sure that those fullbacks are getting high and wide for the U.S., then allows space in behind for the teams that are playing against them. And that's how both goals got scored, one against Jenna Nyswanger and against Crystal Dunn there. Is this an issue? Is this something that all teams are going to start exploiting? Do they need to make changes for that?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of how they're going to adapt with that space being open. The way that they want to attack leaves them very vulnerable on that left side, especially because Fox stays a little bit more tucked in. She stays closer to Dahlkemper or Girma. But on the left, teams on transition just know that it's too quick to recover. Center, whoever's playing center back has been Davidson. Both of those goals hasn't closed down quick enough or hasn't been able to. If you look back at that goal for Canada, they had numbers bombing forward. Jordan Heidema was coming in, Adriana Leon, Ashley Lawrence was there. There's just a lot of players that are getting into the box. So it's hard about who's going to step, who's going to cover, where are we going to lock out space, who's getting in front of the goal because Neyer's not there. It's tough, but I think that they really need to adapt. It's a matter of when does the outside back need to go that high, picking and choosing moments better, and then closing down the space. This goal against Japan, I think Davidson could have done better about closing down to Seiko a little bit quicker, and it wouldn't have given her the angle to finish that, but you live and you learn. It's happening now is what's important. It's not going to happen in the Olympics.
Listen, I feel like there's so much more to talk about in this game, but we had a live show, Lisa and Sandra, after the game. So if you guys want to hear our takes on that game, you can go ahead and go there because we have so many other games to talk about. I want to talk about Twyla Kilgore, though. That's something that we haven't addressed. She was the coach during this tournament, and now it would be Emma Hayes that's taking over for the next international window. How do we think Twyla Kilgore did? You know, obviously you gave your flowers to her, Darian, in the last show saying that, you know, she deserves credit for all that she has done. But Lisa, I want to ask you whether the bar was so low with Vlatko and Donofsky after the Women's World Cup, how the team did, the fact that we didn't see any changes within the lineups, we weren't seeing subs being made. Twyla came in and obviously has done an incredible job and we're so happy for her. But does that have something to do with it? The fact that she took over the team when they were at their lowest, or is that what the part that deserves the most credit?
I would argue that that's harder to do when a team is completely down and out. They haven't lived up to their potential. They're not performing as expected and as they should. To change things around is very difficult, especially knowing under Twyla Kilgore, it was not a permanent thing. This was just a quick Band-Aid fix until Emma Hayes got there. Under Twyla Kilgore, she brought in 9 uncapped players in the span of the end of the World Cups to the beginning of this Olympics. Ava Gattino, Lily Johannes, the 2 players that just most recently got called up, but also Corbin Albert, Jenna Nyswanger, Thompson in the back, Emma Vignola in the back, Jaden Shaw, Olivia Moultrie, Mia Fischel. These are players that Twyla Kilgore brought in, gave them their first senior national team call up into camp, gave them their first caps. And now you look at Jaden Shaw, you can't imagine this women's national team without her. And that's because of Twyla Kilgore.
Yeah, she absolutely deserves her flowers. I think she's got these players bought into a new system. Think about how solid the U.S. has been for so long. To say, you know what, we need to change, we need to adapt, is massive, and she was able to do it. Knowing that she doesn't have this position going forward is wild. I think this is a big testament to just how selfless she is.
Yes.
She really deserves to be in this position. And again, I'm excited to see what she's going to do after this. She should be a head coach somewhere.
I think that it's kind of a disservice, you know, the fact that she did so well and then now has to kind of take the back seat. We always knew Emma Hayes was coming and we were so excited about that hire. But to see how well Twyla Kilgore has done, I'm excited to see whether that continues or whether adding a new head coach and the new people that are coming in from Chelsea, whether that changes the dynamic, right? Because everything that you can add adds a wrinkle. Maybe things change.
But Emma Hayes has been involved, right? Her touch has been all over this and she's been in communication. So I think there will be a transition for this United States going from Kilgore to Hayes, but
there's only 4 games left, Lisa.
Yeah, but I don't think it'll be a giant left turn. It's just going to be a gradual transition for them.
No, I'm excited to see that. I want that to work, obviously, but 4 games left and you have someone else yelling at you from the sideline. It is a different dynamic that you're going to get to, but there's so much more to get to in the show. We're going to keep moving because I'm getting yelled at in my ear. We were missing the last teams qualified for the Olympics. The groups are now complete. Zambia and Nigeria are in over South Africa and Morocco. So this is a look at the Olympic groups here. We see that Zambia in the United States group with Germany and Australia, and then Group C is Spain, Japan, and Nigeria gets in against Brazil. That group looks incredibly tough. Darian, we're going to go ahead and start with Nigeria because you watch a ton of Nigeria. What does it mean for this team to make it back into the Olympics? They missed the last 3. they were meant to be powerhouses. I mean, they usually are in every conversation. Is this a huge statement for them?
Yeah, it's massive. I think we all had our hearts with Nigeria watching the World Cup. I think that was so fun to see them, how far the program's come. You see the players that play stateside having a really good show out there, and they took down some big teams. This is also a federation that hasn't had proper investment, along with a lot of African countries, especially on the women's side. So I think them being having a huge show out at the World Cup and then qualifying for the Olympics, you can't not invest in this team. You can't not want this team to propel forward. I love this for them. They need to be constantly playing in big competitions against big teams because that's how they're going to get better. That's how they're going to compete. Yeah. If they're doing this well with the lack of funding and support that they have, imagine if they do well in the Olympics and the funding that they get, this team will be unstoppable. I think that they'll be one of the top hitters that we're saying, oh, this is a heavyweight group because of this team.
Ooh.
So I like this for them. I think it's huge for the program, and shout out to the players. I'm happy for them.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. Let's go into Zambia here, Lisa, because the growth of their program as well, the fact that they were in the World Cup, they've been performing well. I mean, what does this mean to them?
This is huge for Zambia. I think this is a nation that has continuously proved every time they step on the pitch that they cannot be slept on. They ultimately win 3-2 on aggregate over Morocco. But there were defensive issues with Zambia's play against Morocco. Morocco only had 2 shots on target and finished them in that opening leg. But Zambia, they created the chances. They had opportunities, and they ultimately missed them. Barbara Banda is the key for this Zambian side to continue to elevate this team and grow throughout it. And of course, now that Zambia is in the Olympics, their first test is against the United States, July 25th in Nice. It's going to be very fun to watch that this Zambian side against the United States, the changes that have come, the growth in both of these nations, and the difference that we're seeing in them. And it all comes to a square ahead at the Olympics.
I know we still have a few months to go, but I'm very excited for that matchup. That's going to be wild. I have it on my calendar already. We have the Brilliantly Boring segment, Lex, so stay here with us.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back into Attacking Third, brought to you by PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865. This is our Brilliantly Boring segment where we talk about some of the underappreciated moments in the beautiful game. We're going to start with the Euro qualifiers where Germany beat Iceland, but the Scandinavians did put one past Germany. So why don't we get started on that footage? Darian, talk us through how Iceland was able to exploit this German powerhouse.
Yeah, Germany's showing a little, weirdness in their back line. We've seen them concede some goals time and time again. And Germany came out on the front foot, were able to put one away early. But Iceland had a really, really good response, I think, especially with Svendis Jan's daughter up top. She's such a threat moving forward. And here, keep your eye on Eriksson and watch her commitment to get forward. Again, Svendis Jan's daughter with her hold-up play. Look at Iceland getting into the attacking third. Germany's trying to recover. There's 3 defenders over on the right side of the pitch, but 1v1 on the left. It ends up going wide. But keep your eye on Eriksson in the back post. Svendis here, watch her pull this defender in. There's 4 German defenders in the back. Svendis's movement pulls away, opens up the back post for Eriksdottir, who puts the 1 lone goal away for Iceland against Germany. Svendis Jónsdóttir sadly went down in the match, and that's when Iceland really lost their attack. A lot of it went through her.
Yeah.
She led, her throw-ins are insane, her speed, her hold-up ability. So once she went down, Iceland kind of lost their oomph. But Germany looked really exposed in the back. Other teams are watching that and thinking, oh, okay, Swan transitions, Germany's not going to recover well. And we've seen that time and time again. It's why they didn't do well in the World Cup as well. But they were able to finish this game. I think that they had the tenacity that Iceland didn't have.
I think that one of the big things that we've seen from Germany is their ability to crawl back even when faced with adversity. Talk us through how Germany is able to do that again and again.
Well, this was a much better response from Germany in this second Euro qualifier of this international break than their first one. Remember, against Austria, by the 15th minute, they were down 2-0 at that point. By the 5th minute, Germany is up a goal over Iceland at this point. They were putting consistent pressure on Iceland and being able to attack in a variety of ways, whether it was shots from distance, as we see here, crosses into the box, early services that would get in behind Iceland's back line. But what makes Germany so dangerous is their central players. They are constantly interweaving, they're overlapping, and there's so much fluidity in their movement, particularly Nuskin, Schuler, because Brandon Buhl, they stay wide. They don't really get into the mix because Germany likes to get the ball wide, end line, and send it cross in. So it creates this like mixing bowl pattern in the midfield with the forwards and the central players for Germany. That's really hard to keep track of when you're trying to defend that.
Beautiful. We have to move on to other games because there is so much to cover. Again, I just want to remind you guys. So Spain against the Czech Republic. Czech Republic gets on the score sheet first, Darian. And then, of course, Spain, they come back. They crawl back as they always do and just showed their strength. They scored 3 goals, as one would naturally when you are Spain and you have all of the attacking power that you have. But we didn't see Aitana Bonmatí start this game, and that obviously makes a difference for that midfield. But I personally liked the Czech Republic's goal and how they unbalanced the defense. But I think the storyline always is Spain on their attack.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I thought Czech did really well. It was a really good team goal. Exposed Spain, which we've said time and time again, Spain has their weaknesses too, sending way too many numbers forward, being a little bit arrogant on the ball, not stepping enough, and they've been punished for it. Happy that the Czech got this goal. But of course, Spain being Spain, Jenny, like you said, comes back, wins the game. I do think Hermoso was the player of the match for me on Spain. She was a facilitator on goals. Her vision was insane. She was getting on the end of crosses. Mariana Caldente, what a finish. This was a great ball through by Jenner Hermosa. And, you know, Spain's just unstoppable. You look at their bench and who's coming in. Parayuelo's a sub. What? Bonmatí's on the bench?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, this team is nearly unstoppable, but they do have their weaknesses in the back where I think teams can expose them.
I think for De Castillo on the wide areas for Spain, she is very impressive to watch because Spain has so many heavy hitters, whether it's Hermoso or Caldente or, I mean, any of them. You just list off the players that some of the supporting cast, and De Castillo is one of those players, can step up in big moments. And I think throughout this two-match sequence during this international break against Belgium and then against Czech, she did really well because of her spatial awareness on the pitch, her ability to know when her teammates are getting doubled and tripled and to be the outlet. Then when she receives it, magic on the ball, whether she's cutting it inside, she's dribbling or getting shots off, sending crosses in. I liked her play, and she stood out to me in these two matches for Spain.
That's a great shout, Lisa. We haven't heard that much about her because she is one of more of those fringe players just because there are so many people that we talk about that are just getting the lights, and I think you made a good call there, Darian. Jenny Hermoso in this match, the runs she makes, the way she opens up spaces for her players, just the little things that she does make such a huge difference for the Spain side.
Yeah, absolutely. She is a huge facilitator for this team. Her positioning is solid. I think it's a different team when she's not on the pitch.
Absolutely. Okay, we have to move over to France because France is going into the Olympics as well. Herve Renard, this is going to be his last competition with the French women. He receives a red card in this match, and then this is his last competition. What did we see from France that we liked? Both 1-0 games. And what did we see that maybe they can improve on, Lisa?
France needs to finish their chances. It is way too concerning that they do all this great build-up play. They get into their attacking end. They get good looks and shots, and it has nothing to do with the lack of talent. But Spain cannot score. And that to me is the most concerning thing, especially heading into an Olympics where France is hosting at this point. So France needs to be able to find the back of the net. When you look at France's last 9 games, they've had 7 wins. 6 of them are 1-goal wins. That's not good enough when you're creating as many chances as France has against the competition, whether their ball's in behind, set pieces like this, which ultimately is coming from the goal. But of course, who ends up scoring this lone goal at the end of the game? Your center back. Can we get some of the forwards for France to score? Because to me, that's the most concerning point right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Diagne was a really good player in this match for me. She was sending balls in on the right side that were incredible. Just no one getting on the end of it. Dusamer, I think, was a good player, but it's a struggle for France. It's something that they've been dealing with for a really long time, and I completely agree where other teams are going to capitalize on that. But I think France defensively looks really good. They didn't allow a lot of opportunities. I think their pressure is amazing. They had two clean sheets, which is something that we should highlight, that this is great for France, because they've conceded goals before. They've knocked them out of major tournaments where we're like, how the hell did that happen? Because they should be dominating this match. So I like that. Maybe they're focusing more on the defensive side, but they should be scoring a lot more. I agree with the powerhouses that they have up top, especially. It should be 4 or 5 goals each game.
Well, the French goalkeeper deserves a lot of credit there. Obviously, the back line is incredible for France, but she made some big stops at the end of this game, the last 10 minutes against Sweden. That kind of kept them in this and made sure that they got the 3 points here. Next, we're going to be talking with Lisa, speaking to Sofia Huerta. So we're going to throw to that interview in a little bit. Stay with us.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into Attacking Third. Seattle Reign's Sofia Huerta spoke to Lisa Carlin about her contract extension and becoming a leader and a veteran on the team.
Hey, Sofia, welcome in. Defender for Seattle Reign in the NWSL. Congratulations are in order because you just signed a contract extension. You're staying in Washington State for until 2027. You've already been with the club for a number of years, but now you get another few years under your belt. Why did you want to stay with Seattle Reign?
I wanted to stay with Seattle for so many reasons. I think first and foremost, since I've been with the club, I've immediately felt like it was home. Like I instantly connected with the city and the fans and the team. I think Seattle has a good reputation in terms of the culture that we've cultivated here. I think people love being here. It's an environment that can continue to grow and you feel really supported, but you also are challenged every day. I feel like what the Reign has done for my career professionally is also something I'll just never be able to forget and something I'm forever grateful for. So why would I want to leave somewhere where I love being every day? And I think also we've always competed for trophies. I mean, since I've been here, we've been in the playoffs every year. We made it to the final last year, won the Shield a couple years ago. I really believe that we're going to continue that winning mentality and I want to be a part of it. For as long as possible.
You have developed with your time in Seattle, and there's been a lot of changes with the club. Now we get to see the return of the Queen this year as Seattle Reign kind of rebranded and went back to their original name. You saw Laura Harvey come back in as head coach, new ownership groups. There's been a lot of change and also change within you as a player because you've grown and you're now a veteran in this league. How have you developed as a veteran and really stepped into a leadership role with this club?
Well, I think coming to the Reign really helped me just become a true professional. It's like I knew what it really meant because I was playing with some veterans in the league. I saw how they were such professionals, and I really became a professional when I came here. So I learned the ins and outs of being a true, true professional and, you know, just having good habits and being able to be the best version of myself on and off the field. And so I feel like being in the league for so long, you know, you change as a player, you change as a person, and the Reign has really allowed me to be who I want to be on and off the field and has just made me the best person. So I feel like it's been fun being here. I love being, you know, a leader and showing the young players who come in on this team, like what it's like to really be able to be a professional and not take this for granted. You know, not a lot of players get to be professional athletes and it's fun to come into work every day. So do everything that you can to be the best player you can be. And it's fun. So, it's been a fun few years, and which is why I want to stay for a few more.
arguably you have the best job in the entire world. So it's great to see you're appreciating that every single day. The NWSL is growing, right? 14 clubs this year. It's the biggest it's ever been. And there are a lot of internationals in the league. There are over 30 countries represented. And in Seattle, you have Korean midfielder Jiso Young, who made history already being the first Korean player to score in the NWSL. But what influence do all these internationals have on the league?
So much influence. I mean, we know that women's sports and women's soccer has grown so much over the years. I mean, I try and think about, you know, when I first got into the league, how much it has changed and evolved. And it's like overwhelming to think about the differences. You know, now that people are investing in women's sports all over the world globally, you see internationals coming into this league and making a statement immediately. And, you know, G is just, she's unreal. She's so good. It didn't take her long to adjust to this league at all. As you saw her goal versus Chicago, I mean, that was one of the best goals I've seen in my career, to be honest. So I think it just means so much how much the women's game is growing and, you know, how everybody is finally investing and seeing what happens when you do invest in women's sports and how much of an impact that we have, not just, you know, in our community, but just globally.
On that goal from G, I believe you're the one that served the ball into the box. So good job on the service. In the growth of the game, the NWSL announced that this summer they have a new partnership with Liga MX Femenil in the Summer Cup, which is going to be a little international tournament happening in the summer with all 14 NWSL clubs and six clubs from Mexico. Of course, you and Seattle are participating in this. It's a good competition to kind of unite the two countries that are sisters, being so close to each other. But is there an element of a lot of number of games and the congestion in the schedule? How much of an importance is that, or concern is the congestion of a schedule for a player like you?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you add extra games into the season, it can be challenging. You know, as we've all been talking about recently, the number in ACLs and injury is continuing to grow. And I think, you know, it kind of has lined with like international break and then coming back and playing with your club. So I always think it's a conversation we need to be having because we do not want to continue seeing these horrific injuries. But at the same time, we also want to grow the game and grow the relationships with, you know, other countries. And I think for someone who played for Mexico and saw where the, you know, where Mexico was in terms of women's sports back in 2013, I mean, it's amazing to see how much they've grown their sport there. I mean, there are so many fans who go to those games and they get so much exposure. I mean, I'm flipping through the channel and I see Tigres playing all the time. I mean, just the investment you see in that. And now, you know, obviously we're coming together and putting on a tournament. I mean, although it can be challenging and it's a lot of minutes on the body, I also think that it's a good opportunity to play each other and just, you know, battle it out.
And continue to grow the game ultimately. And that's what it's going to do. Exposure for the Mexican club teams and, of course, for the teams across the NWSL. We are coming off of an international break and the NWSL returns this weekend. So if you and Seattle are traveling to the Bay Area to take on expansion side Bay FC, and as an alum of Santa Clara, what are you most excited about returning to the Bay Area?
I was so excited when the NWSL announced that the Bay was coming to the league, you know, for multiple reasons. One, I know a lot of the people who invested, obviously Danielle Slayton, Brandi Chastain, Leslie Osborne, Allie Wagner. Those are Santa Clara alums. So I've known them forever, have always had a good relationship with them. Anyone who's been, you know, to Santa Clara and is part of the community knows that we are always rooting for each other. I mean, obviously, besides when we're playing them on Sunday, we'll not be rooting for them. But, you know, it's really exciting just because that's, you know, those were four really important years of my career in terms of becoming an all-around player. You know, being from Idaho, I think that I missed out on a lot in terms of, you know, being super technical and just playing all year round. I never really got to do that. And so it's once I went to Santa Clara, being under Jerry Smith, I really was able to evolve and grow and then learned that I was good enough to be a professional. So Santa Clara, you know, holds a very special place in my heart. I can't wait to be back there. It's going to feel really nostalgic. I love playing in that stadium so much. It's a great stadium. And I'm so excited that, you know, there's a team there and can't wait to play there.
Bay FC as an expansion side, there are some unknowns and maybe some question marks around this side in the league and how they're playing the style, because really we've only seen them for 3 weeks. What do you expect to see from Bay this weekend?
They like to play. You know, I'm not going to lie. I've been very impressed with some of the soccer that they've played over the last several weeks. You know, Albertine is showing that he's very confident with his team and playing out of the back, you know, and they have a lot of speed up top. I'm really, really impressed, you know, and I think it's great. I feel like the NWSL is definitely known for being transitional and something that, you know, when foreigners come in, they're always like, it's very transitional. And that's true. So I think Bay is coming in and playing a little bit more than we typically see. But that's something that I love. And I know that I'm speaking for a lot of people that we kind of want to see more of that football being played. So I'm very impressed with the club and excited to go there.
An important 3 points on the line for you and Bay this weekend as you guys take on each other at Bay PayPal Park on Sunday afternoon. So congratulations on your contract extension, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Stay with us here on Attacking Third. When we come back, Sandra Herrera is going to join us to talk all of the latest news. Don't go anywhere.
Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Welcome back in to Attacking Third. This is the time when we welcome in our bestie and OG Attacking Third woman, Sandra Herrera. Thank you so much for joining us, CBS Sports writer.
Going on, yo.
Sandra, the Telegraph is reporting that Chelsea have reached an agreement with Sonia Bonpastor to take over for Emma Hayes when she comes to the U.S. women's national team. Is she the ideal replacement? I know you watch a lot of the Blues. You're a big fan. You've seen what Emma Hayes has done. Is she the woman?
You know, I don't know if she's the ideal replacement. I think we'll obviously find out when she starts coaching with the team. But I think as far as an iconic franchise needing to take a big swing, cast a really big net, land a big fish, that's what they've done with Bonpastor. I mean, this is someone who has been synonymous, an iconic legend of France women's football, former player herself, got into coaching. Lyon promoted her up from Lyon Academies to go ahead and take over their iconic senior women's national or senior club team. And she's had a winning record with them. So as far as getting someone who has been around, has experience with a winning culture, I think this makes a lot of sense for Chelsea. So I know there's going to be some really big shoes to fill in regards to Emma Hayes, because this is a head coach that is leaving Chelsea with a lot of things. So it's not just, you know, just a personality, it's coaching experience, it's her entire methodology. She's even taking some staff with her, and Bonpastor is kind of filling in some of those, you know, big holes that she might, you know, the things that Emma is taking with her. So she's also thinking about bringing along Camille Abelie as well, another former player, so bringing staff with her as well. So I think in terms of what we've seen from Lyon and Bonpastor, I'm sure if you ask, you know, some diehard fans, there's holes there that we've seen get exposed a little bit, especially during some of these later rounds in the Champions League with Lyon. But as far as someone who is used to being in a locker room with a lot of talented individuals and ironing out some tactics and presenting that to the players in order to make sure that they're successful, this is possibly the most ideal candidate they could have got to, quote unquote, replace Emma Hayes.
Let's keep talking about some managerial candidates, because staying in the Super League, Manchester United is in talks and has offered a contract to Mark Skinner to stay with the club. Tough
play right now in the Super League with United. They're fourth in the table. The fans are chanting at games that they don't want him in charge anymore. What does this decision from Manchester United to extend his contract tell you about the club?
Look, I can't lie. I'm with the fans a little bit on this one. It was a little bit of a head scratcher. Look, again, we're talking about stepping into big shoes. Mark Skinner getting to Man United after Casey Stoney's resignation and her departure to NWSL, and got the team to a respectable fourth place finish, you know, in that first season, and then followed that up with a second place finish. And I think that is where folks were looking for Man United to go ahead and build upon. I mean, Mark Skinner was vocal then and has been just as vocal leading into this recent campaign that this was a team that wanted to build on that success. And they've fallen just a little bit short of that, maybe a lot of it short, depending on who you ask. I mean, they're 15 points behind first place Man City. They're 6 points behind third place Arsenal. And while the fans have been vocal about their displeasure with the manager, he's also someone who has gone on mic to kind of point fingers a little bit and say, we've got to do better in terms of demanding a little bit more, perhaps from ownership executives who are in charge of making sure that they're on top of those transfer windows and recruitment. So maybe this is a little bit of an ongoing conversation about a bigger picture of things. We've seen what Emma Hayes has done in Chelsea. Perhaps that's something that Man United wants to chase. Now, whether or not Mark Skinner is going to be that figurehead to kind of establish that type of legacy, that type of culture that a lot of clubs in the world want to go ahead and chase themselves will remain to be seen, but they have to have that figurehead, right? So maybe, just maybe, these are some of those beginning conversations, and maybe this is someone, you know, in Skinner who does have the ear of ownership or executives when he is standing in front of camera and saying these things like, we're not doing enough, we're not putting enough money behind, we're not getting the right resources, so we need to make sure that we are in order to compete and remain in on the top of the table. So if they're negotiating with him, hopefully that means they negotiate with others to make sure that Man United gets back on top.
Well, Sandra, in the meantime of all of that hopeful negotiating that we all agree with you on, they're playing Chelsea this weekend. A huge game. The last time, three times they played Chelsea, they've lost and only scored once. With Mark Skinner getting his contract renewed and players even coming out and saying it's been frustrating, we need this to develop, we need more players, we need more depth, how are they approaching this game against a really strong Chelsea side?
I don't know if you could look at this one and say it's a must win, considering everything and everyone who's in front of them on the table, but you want to have a statement game for sure. So they want to come into this one and try to go toe to toe with Chelsea. I mean, this is a team that has got a lot of their plate right now in regards to balancing club and Champions League. So hopefully Man United can go out there and at least make things interesting.
Well, we're going to go ahead and change topics to the NWSL. Big weekend after the international break, Sandra. Bay FC against Seattle Reign is the one that you want to talk about. Rachel Kudinanji and Asisat Ashawala headed to the Olympics. They're coming back into this Bay FC team, though. What do you expect from this match?
I want to see a competitive game. I think these are two teams who've got a lot to prove right now. We're heading into week four. This is when you want to see those team identities kind of roll out on the pitch. Seattle have shown us that they are exactly who we thought they were, but they're coming off of a couple of losses, so hitting a slump early in the season. They're going to want to take it to an expansion franchise that are still trying to figure things out. And Bay FC have faded a little bit down the stretch in their opening week, so I think this is going to be the ideal matchup for Seattle to hopefully come out on top.
Beautiful, Sandra. We love when you join us and you fill us in on absolutely everything in the world of football. Appreciate you.
Thanks, y'all. Have a good show.
All right, guys, we're going to be talking the other NWSL matchups that we have highlighted. So stay with us here on Attacking Third.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
It is match day 4 after the international break in the NWSL. So many good matchups to watch. Houston Dash up against Washington Spirit on Friday. Utah Royals against Orlando Pride as well. North Carolina Courage up against the Portland Thorns, who have been struggling, but Sam Coffey with that late equalizer against Racing Louisville, who will be playing against San Diego Wave. Let's get straight into it because there are so many to kind of get deep into. Gotham has their home opener. They are the last team to have a home opener, but they are up against a Kansas City team that has been incredibly successful and has so many different goal scorers. What are we expecting from these baddies in their home opener against, I would say, the hardest team in the league right now?
Most difficult attacking team in the league.
Okay, fair, fair, fair.
You can score on them, though.
Yes.
So I'm expecting golazos, golazos, golazos. This was my match because I think it being a home opener, it's Gotham's championship game. It's the Mahomes-Manning matchup. There's a lot of trash talking going on, a lot of social play. I'm here for it. I think this game is being hyped up. I think Gotham, I'm really excited to see what both of these teams actually did during the international break because Kansas City really needed work defensively. Gotham missing Lynn Williams, Rose Lavelle, Midge Purse. Big identity players for Gotham. So how are they going to adjust? Is Dunny going to stay up top? Is she going to come in the middle? I like Yasmin Ryan up top. I like her going 1v1 on the wings. How are they going to keep scoring goals? So it's going to be a chess match. I like both of these managers. How is this game going to play out? I think a crap ton of goals and hopefully really exciting, but I'm looking forward to it. I think all through the NWSL, I want to see how teams changed and worked through this break because I think a lot of teams really needed to self-reflect, change around their game plans, and both of these teams had some weaknesses that they both needed to work on.
And hopefully a big crowd at Red Bull Arena because the Challenge Cup was there and there was a large crowd at that point.
Second largest.
I knew there was a fun stat with it. So.
But there's something about it being at home that kind of gives you extra energy. But this Kansas City side, like we talked about, so many great players. I'm wondering after the international break if everybody gets time, right? We talk about Crystal Dunn coming off of playing in the game. You say that maybe she needs to play. Is that going to happen considering that a lot of these players are coming off?
Yeah, I hope so. I think they need these players there. At the home opener for the season, it sets the tempo for what it's going to be like to come play at Red Bull Arena.
And a player, you want to play in that kind of game at your home opener.
Yeah, and Gotham has never won this series. They've tied 3 times and lost that.
That's an important stat.
You remember the last year, Kansas City nearly knocked them out of playoffs. Yep. Nearly. So I think there's a lot of history between these two teams that Gotham really needs to come out and want to get their first win against them. This is why this is my game to watch.
That is a big one to talk about. There's no Allie Krieger this time to clear the ball off the line for Gotham there. Lisa, Chicago Red Stars and Angel City FC is your matchup to watch. Chicago Red Stars, one of only 2 teams that are still unbeaten.
Yeah, Chicago at the top of the standings, they've looked good through the first 3 weeks of play. We're seeing so much more defensive efforts coming from Chicago's side under Lauren Donaldson. That is the backbone of his team. Can they sit in a low block? In their last matchup for the Red Stars, Mallory Swanson, she got her first goal in the run of play and her first goal this year with the Red Stars. Now she's coming off of an international break where she had two of outstanding games with the United States. Swanson needs to carry that over to her play with Chicago. Can she link the back line? Can, when Chicago is sitting in a lower block, can she exploit, move quickly in transition? And meanwhile, for Angel City, they are struggling right now. They are bottom of the table. They're winless, and they've struggled to connect their lines. The defensive, the midfield, and the front line are all very disjointed when we've seen Angel City play. They don't have options when they're looking to build out of the back. I hope they worked on that over this last week during the international break so they can find those different pockets and ultimately move the ball forward. I think it'll be interesting how they line up with Chicago's sitting back defensively and Angel City's almost inability to build out of the back.
That's such a great point, and that's definitely what to watch for during that match. Lisa, great job. My matchup of the weekend, we don't have that much time left, but it is North Carolina Courage and Portland Thorns. Portland Thorns has been struggling. They have not been the team that we're used to them being. They're currently in 13th place. They only have 1 point on the season, and then North Carolina Courage, Ashley Sanchez is a part of this team that we've now seen, and they have so many great players on their squad as well under Sean Nahas, so obviously one to watch there. Portland coming off of that 2-2 draw. Remember, Sam Coffey, last late-minute winner, to kind of get that 1 point. So this is not the Portland that we're used to seeing. How do they kind of fix this, Darian?
Yeah, I think they need to not rely so much on Sophia Smith. They need to get their midfield involved, taking shots from distance, pulling teams out in a way that's a little more strategic than just hoping Smith does something amazing right. and scores a bunch of goals, which she is going to do regardless. But the rest of the team needs to get on par with her. And I think with this international break, hopefully they've got that and have been working on it.
Yeah, Lisa, I mean, when we talk about the Portland Thorns players, Jessie Fleming, Sam Coffey, Olivia Moultrie, yeah. Janine Becky, Sophia Smith, Morgan Weaver, they have the players that you need, and they're unable to put it together. Let's see if this is the weekend that they do it. Thank you guys so much for joining us here on Attacking Third, brought to you by PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865. We're going to be back in the studio on Monday to recap all of the weekend's actions, so we'll see you then.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.